back up, Dustin.
We are recording everybody. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for your patience as we had our committee meeting prior to this. So we are going to get started with tonight's city council meeting. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Francis Smith.
Present.
Ms. Quintec.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Palumbo.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Before we go on, I just want to note Mayor Reynolds is not here tonight as our Beth Mayer School District Foundation is hosting their annual benefit this evening. We do have one citation tonight recognizing recent city retiree Fire Lieutenant Robert Shuck Jr. I believe Lieutenant Shuck is not here, so we will make sure that he receives the citation in the mail. Before we go on with tonight's regular agenda items, City Council does have one public hearing scheduled. This public hearing is to review and accept public comment on the proposed use of funds to be received under the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant, and that grant is in the amount of $33,577. I'm going to call the public hearing to order concerning the proposed use of funds to be received under the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Grant, as I said, in the amount of $33,577. I'll turn to whomever in the administration wants to start the presentation.
Hello, good evening. As the chief of police and a City of Bethlehem resident, I see firsthand the challenges our community faces every day on our streets. Our officers work diligently to ensure public safety, but we know that technology can be an invaluable tool to help us do even more. This is why I'm here tonight to emphasize the importance of using the available grant funding, which is specifically designated for public safety initiatives, for much needed improvements to our city intersection camera system. So funding is available to us through the Justice Assistance Grant, the JAG grant, and it will be utilized to increase camera coverage. With the expanded camera network, we can monitor more intersections, focusing on high-risk areas where accidents and traffic violations are more prevalent. It'll also allow us to improve data and analytics. Advanced camera systems equipped with higher quality cameras and real-time data analytics will help us respond more swiftly and accurately to incidents, and also aid in investigating crimes that happen at or near intersections. In conclusion, this grant funding presents an invaluable opportunity for us to not only improve the safety of our roads, but also to enhance the quality of life for every person who drives, walks, or cycles around our city. By investing in these crucial improvements to our intersection camera system, we are sending a clear message that the safety of our community is a priority today and into the future. I'd be more than happy to answer any of Council's questions if they have any.
Thank you, Chief. So I'll start with members of council. Is there any questions or comment from any members of council? Councilwoman Quintet.
Thank you. I just, I appreciate this, and as you know, I'm a big advocate for street safety, pedestrian safety, bicycle safety. How are those cameras used? Is it after the fact for information gathering? We don't use them for tickets or anything, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Most of the time, it's historical data that is recorded, and if there's an accident at the intersection, if there's a crime that occurs nearby, we're able to go back and view that historical data and utilize it as evidence.
Thank you. And I mean, this isn't totally on topic because obviously we're not using them for enforcement, but has that conversation come up as a means of slowing people down, getting them to heed stop signs, stoplights, things like that?
As a deterrent, yes, ma'am. We are hoping that adding more cameras throughout the community is going to hopefully correct some bad driver behavior.
But not by issuing tickets, right? Just by the presence of the cameras themselves?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Councilwoman Wilhelm?
I'm just curious, are the funds going to be used to both replace and add new cameras?
So we're looking to add.
Okay, this is...
Yes.
So how many intersections will be impacted, do you have a sense?
So we're hoping two intersections. Originally, we were thinking about Broad Street, Broad and Center, Broad and Linden. However, there's been a significant increase in major crashes over on the Stefco Boulevard corridor. So we're also looking at intersections over there as well, such as Stefco and Bayard, Stefco and Washington Avenue.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilwoman Lear?
Do the funds cover just the hardware, or is there associated service with the cameras that needs to be like a subscription or anything, or server storage, backups, anything like that?
So that is a budget item. The subscription is a budget item that we pay on a yearly basis. So the funding would just be for the labor as well as the equipment that's going to be posted.
Okay. Does the associated subscription go up per camera, or is it like a blanket or banded? Or
it's banded.
Okay. And do you know, ballpark, how long the footage, the recording is stored for? Like before, I assume it wipes out over time.
Yes, there's a retention period. You can flag certain footage, and if it's flagged, it'll be retained forever, or we have various retention periods for accidents, for crimes that occur. I believe it's 2 weeks. But that's something that I can get an exact answer from our IT department on and get back to you. But I believe it's 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Councilwoman Cranston.
Thank you. This is great. It's a great use of the grant. I was just wondering, do you have an idea of how many cameras we have now? Like how many intersections have the cameras?
So I believe we have 28 intersections covered with our camera network throughout the city.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Chief, I have one quick question. This is a grant we typically receive every year.
Yes, this is a grant that, I'm going to knock on wood, that we receive from the federal government on a yearly basis. And it is based, the grant amount is based on our crime statistics. So that's why some other jurisdictions may receive more, some may receive less, but it's based on our NIBRS numbers.
And what do we historically use the grant funds for?
So in the past, we've used it to purchase mobile data terminals, the laptops that are in the police cars. We've been doing a really good job of working with IT to make sure that those are being replaced on a regular basis. Which allows us this year to use this money towards the cameras.
So just to confirm, we're good with MDTs right now?
Yes.
Understood. That was my question, just if we're putting the money here, what are we not spending it on? But thank you, Chief. Are there any other questions or comments from members of council? Thanks, Chief Scott.
Thank you.
Before I move on, I will recognize if there's any public comment. Now, this is strictly for the public hearing. That's about the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Grant. So I'll go around the room if there's anyone who wanted to make comment regarding the grant that we just discussed. Is there anyone to the left who wants to make comment? I'll turn to the wide center. Mr. Shire?
Bill Shire, 1898 Navano. I can't read. Is this the opportunity to have a trifecta tonight? I was struck though by the comment that these cameras are not used for enforcement, but only for data gathering, I guess. That's something we should not advertise because, and one other comment, I hope related enough. I had an experience last night with a pedestrian. I think maybe we should hand out some tickets to pedestrians. If I hadn't seen these people starting to dash across the street, and if I hadn't stopped when the light turned green, I would have hit them. And I blew my horn at him a little bit because that was reckless. And the guy wouldn't make an issue out of it, and I got a finger to boot, and so on and so on. But some pedestrians could be well served with an occasional ticket. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Was there anyone else in the Y Center who has made comment on the grant? Mr. Faber.
Hello, Harry Faber. I too don't want to miss the opportunity to speak three times tonight. I like to hear the sound of my own voice. So, two intersections for $33,577. And I understand what you're saying about the not advertising it. I can totally comprehend that. I do want to disagree with, again, the nature of fines and how that affects people. Fines, we all understand, disproportionately affect lower-income people. So I do kind of disagree with the issuing of citations. Maybe we can give them a stop that, opposed to a citation. But I gotta think, when we talk about crime and quality of life, the biggest contributor of crime is poverty and lack of an education. So, and I understand the points being laid out as to, you know, the camera equipment, but I do think if we want to get more grant money for this system, which is based off of lowering crime rate, we should invest in programs that address the poverty issues and the education and lack of education in this city. So that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Is there anyone else in the wide center who wants to make comment? I'll turn to the right. All right, so that's going to conclude our public comment on the public hearing. We will put a resolution on the April 1st, 2025 council meeting agenda. The public hearing is adjourned. Moving on to our regular agenda, approval of the minutes from the March 4, 2025 City Council meeting. Any comments on the minutes? I see none. Minutes are going to stand approved. Moving on to our public comment. Our first public comment, for anyone who's not familiar, is for any subject that is not being voted on this evening. We do have a 5-minute time limit, and I would ask anyone who chooses to address council to state your name for the record for a city clerk. We only have one person previously signed up. That's Artie Curatola.
Hi, I'm Artie Curatola, 813 Wofford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, South Side. Also, I am one of the hosts for an international peace concert called Wake Up, Rise Up, Live for Peace. Now, this is your chance, City Council, for you to prove that you are the voice in the bodies of the people. If you're willing to speak about peace and world unity and what Bethlehem is doing that other cities aren't doing to make Bethlehem an example of other cities to be eliminating violence and spreading peace and world unity. That's your chance to speak all over the world. It goes on for since 2021. I've been the host of the Lehigh Valley stage. 1 hour I got of the 24 hours. But they're going to go 48 hours this year. I don't know anybody that got 48 hours except Eddie Murphy. But we're doing it with Wake Up, Rise Up, Live for Peace. Unfortunately, they only give you 3 minutes, not 5 minutes, to speak on world unity, peace. Anybody can speak. You won't be generally on the Lehigh Valley stage if everybody in City Council is speaking, and Chief Cott and Harry. But the thing is, you might be on one of the stages in Ghana, Africa, speaking about Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And they'll be tuned in to know about Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, or Paris, France, or Germany, or Italy. It goes all over the world, even Mexico. So if you like, you're more than welcome to say something. Me being one of the hosts and performing artists on the Wake Up, Rise Up, Live for Peace. Offering you the chance to do this. It has to be emailed to me, the video landscape mode. It could be on your on your cell phone. It does not have to be a professional video. We'll make it look professional. It has to be to me by April 14th. This day, this Wake Up, Rise Up, Live for Peace is linked with the International Day of Peace on the 21st of September with the United Nations, which got me to speak not too long ago in New York City at a large United Nations gathering, interviewed by Nanu Tong and Sandy Wong. Nanu Tong is the lady that puts all the United Nations gatherings together in all the large cities, LA, but she's from LA, New York, Chicago, all over the place. But we're linked with the United Nations International Day of Peace. It's quite a large event, and if you haven't heard of it yet, you will be. They claim that they get over 10 million viewers each year. So, you know, I don't know. The United Nations knew about it. They invited me to speak and be interviewed. So, at any rate, it's on the 21st of September, but your videos have to be in by April 14th. Anybody here can speak, but I guarantee, but you won't probably be on the Lehigh Valley stage or my stage, but you might, it will still be out there speaking, and they'll know where you're from, and you'll be making people know a little bit more about the city of Bethlehem being among the top 20 cities, safest cities in the entire United States because of video cameras that were placed up in 2017, and I was pushing on city council meetings way back before I knew Ms. Zubinski and Eddie Zaborski and many of the other older people that were on city council, pushing for those security cameras. And we have an unbelievable police force, thanks to Chief Cott and all the police officers in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. They're all doing a great job. I hope to hear from at least one of you from City Council, if not all of you, with the video sent to rtcuratola@gmail.com, rtiecuratola@gmail.com. God bless you. Keep on rocking. Go deep in the deep.
Thank you, Mr. Caracciola. So that exhausts our list of who signed up to speak for a first public comment. So I'll go around the room. Is there anyone to the left who wants to make comment on anything that we're not voting on this evening? In the front? Did you want to? So you don't have to. We'll all be here after the meeting if you wanted to speak to the council individually.
You can do it, yeah. I'll try.
Okay. You're more than welcome. Whatever you're comfortable with.
Is this okay? We can hear me?
Okay.
You can do it. Okay. Hi. I'm sorry, I'm like so nervous right now. All right. Good evening. My name is Catherine, and I live in West Bethlehem. This isn't my first time at one of these meetings, but this is my first time actually saying something. I believe now, considering all of the things that have been happening at the federal level, it is imperative that, you know, citizens and residents and whatnot voice their concerns, get involved, and take action against the current destruction of democracy, if you will. Our city officials, county officials, and state level officials must know we are struggling and not happy, and they shouldn't give in to whatever corporations and the wealthy and whatnot, you know, basically want. In addition, our elected officials should also not be afraid to speak out in defense of us or against wrongdoing. You know, they're, I believe, supposed to be here to work for all of us. Our silence is compliance. I think I said enough. I'm sorry. I'm really nervous.
Thank you, Captain. Was there anyone else that left who wants to make comment on anything not being voted on this evening?
I'll turn to the center. Anyone in the center, I will go from left to right. Mr. Shire.
Part two of the trifecta, Bill Shire, 1898. To the young lady who just spoke, it's normal to be apprehensive the first time you speak publicly, but the more you do it, the easier it becomes. It's a hard choice tonight to decide whether to talk about Mr. Netanyahu or Mr. Trump. But since the condition with Mr. Trump is, I think, going to get worse, that can be postponed to a future date. I'll just mention that on NPR today, I heard an interesting comment from the dean of the law school at Berkeley, who said, was asked about, are we in a constitutional crisis? And he said, a constitutional crisis is not a either-or proposition. There's no magic dividing line. He said it's a continuum, and we're in that continuum now. Now, with the he was perhaps thinking in particular of Trump's remark that about impeaching the judge that issued a decision he didn't like, and John Roberts responded a few hours later saying that was not an appropriate comment from the president. Now, I'll stick tonight with Mr. Netanyahu because I don't think it can get any worse with him. It's become clear to me, at least, that he wants every single Palestinian out of Gaza. And why do I arrive at this conclusion? Well, as best I understand it, it has to do with negotiations after the first phase of the ceasefire to negotiate a permanent end to the war. And this was something that happened in the closing days of the Biden administration. The agreement was that the negotiations would begin and the hostages would then be released. Netanyahu wants to change that around with the blessing of the Trump administration. The hostages get released before negotiations begin. What on earth is the difference? There is some difference, yes. But an argument has been made by the administration that this was an agreement in the Biden administration, and it's not, the Trump administration is not bound by any agreements reached during the Biden administration. That's another footnote, at least, to a constitutional crisis. The difference seems to be rather precious, and to me, it means that Netanyahu just wanted an excuse to resume the bombing. So that's my take on it. Let me mention one other thing, and I have mentioned before a show on NPR called Left, Right, and Center. I can't recommend it more highly to everyone here. Council Member Wilhelm is a devotee of that show, and I'm sure she'll agree with me that it's, well, they got Sarah Isger from the right and Mo from the left, and David is the moderator. They respect each other, they like each other, they're very smart and thoughtful, and it's just fascinating every time. Mo came up with a comparison, which Sarah thought was brilliant, with comparing Charlottesville, Virginia, and Columbia University. You might recall, at the time of the shattered Charlottesville, there were these people carrying torches and chanting, "Jews will not replace us." That was clearly anti-Semitic, and Trump said afterwards, well, there's good people on both sides. Well, now, as in the case of Columbia University, if in the case of one graduate student, who's now a candidate, by the way, who signed a letter protesting the civilian deaths in Gaza and civilian deaths in Israel has been accused by the Trump administration of aligning herself with terrorists. So ICE came to her door, and anyway, she's in Canada now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else in the center who wants to make comment? Mr. Faber?
I want to commend you, Mr. Schreier. I'm very impressed with a lot of the stuff you said. I have to address a lot of the same issues. Harry Faber, first I would like to address the fact that Israel violated the ceasefire and massacred 400 people last night. Netanyahu said, quote, "This is only the beginning," end quote. The Western media is trying to convince the people this is because Hamas has refused to negotiate, when in fact it is because Israel has refused to follow the ceasefire deal, which it agreed to. The second phase, as Mr. Schreier had talked about, was to begin an agreement on permanently ending the war. Netanyahu has refused to enter these negotiations to pressure Hamas into new terms and has blocked aid into Gaza since March 2nd. The White House press secretary stated, quote, "The Trump administration was consulted by the Israelis on their attacks in Gaza tonight," end quote. What does this mean? It means our federal government enabled and permitted the terrorist attack against sleeping children and civilians at 4 a.m. in the middle of the night. Also, I would like to mention the fact that the United States, with direct orders from Trump, launched a series of missile strikes the past few nights on Yemen's capital, Sana'a, killing at least 50 people, I think I saw 53 as the latest estimate, and injuring over 100 more. And again, to address the situation in Columbia University, Mahmoud Khalil, a Palestinian immigrant and a legal permanent resident, was kidnapped from his apartment on March 8th by federal immigration authorities and is right now being held in prison for his political speech. There is no evidence he has broken any law, and he is not being charged with a crime. To quote Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, quote, "Here's why everyone should care. In America, your political speech is protected, whether or not the president likes what you say. But today, if you're loyal to Donald Trump, your speech is going to be protected. But if you are disloyal to Trump, or you're organizing against Trump's political agenda, your speech could be criminalized. You could find yourself in jail." Now, Trump chose to begin by disappearing a Palestinian immigrant, hoping that his place of birth and immigrant status would cause people to look up the other way. But we cannot, because once it becomes normal for the regime to disappear people simply for protesting against the regime's policies, once a citizen or a resident of America can be locked away with no charges against them simply because they protested, there is no going back for America. Today it is Mahmoud Khalil, tomorrow it's me or you, end quote. And I believe today it is more likely me than you, City Council, because again, we have been waiting for ceasefire resolution, we have been waiting for condemnation, and you have stayed complacent. I believe I mentioned imperial boomerang theory last meeting, but allow me to refresh if I was mistaken. The imperial boomerang is how governments will develop repressive techniques to control colonial territories and will eventually deploy those same techniques domestically against their own citizens. What we allow our federal government to do, the violence that we normalize, is us essentially digging our own graves. Palestine is and has historically been used by the West and the U.S. Empire as a laboratory for the empire to develop a playbook for violence, propaganda, and fascism. The only way we can survive is through standing in our moral obligation to resist any form of injustice anywhere. Just like the brave people of Yemen, who from the very beginning took up the call to oppose and end the genocide in Gaza, regardless of what it will cost them. For us to do that, we not only need to unite as a working class here in the imperial core, but also form international solidarity with the workers of the world. As it pertains to council, I expect our public officials to do something, say something. I'm still waiting for a ceasefire resolution. The Palestine Coalition is waiting for a ceasefire resolution. I am waiting for a written statement as was provided when we first called for a welcoming city legislation. This affects all of us, and thus change is dependent on all of us. Silence is compliance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Faber. Is there anyone else in the center who wants to make comment? Mr. Antalis.
Yeah.
Stephen Antonics, 77 Ridge, I applaud and totally agree with and support the last two speakers. So I will not say that because they said it all. At the last meeting, a number of council members took exception to my comment that longevity of city residents was an important factor in effective governance. A citizen who had served as a council member joined them and while speaking managed to catch a sideward menacing glance in my direction. Previously at an earlier meeting, I equated that special sense of Long City residents equivalent to the feeling when hearing their alma mater at a sporting event. A feeling that the Marine Corps instills in this ranch called esprit de corps, or once a Marine, always a Marine. An example of the importance of longevity was exhibited by Council at the August 8, 2022 meeting of Council on the COA of accepting the HCC decision concerning preservation of Southside buildings and the ArtsQuest expansion proposal. Two council members with limited residency voted against the building's preservation while ad nauseum praising ArtsQuest and seldom, if ever, mentioning historic preservation. It sounded as if the future of ArtsQuest and not the two buildings was at stake. Two council members with extended city residence voted in favor of the COA, citing not only the importance of ArtsQuest but extensive knowledge of Southside history justifying the building's preservation. One of the two who voted for preservation also suggested alternate plans of consolidation of ArtsQuest by moving it in proximity to steel stacks. This would save demolition costs and add the revenue by the sale of the buildings, thereby offsetting the cost of any alternate plans. Now this might be classed as tongue-in-cheek, these comments from here. Another term for that special feeling can be introduced here, and that is mom's apple pie. If you never tasted mom's apple pie, it'll be next to impossible to explain to a non-imbiber. And this is exactly the case with council members. If you do not have it, you simply do not have it. It can be the best of intention, but you just don't have it. Sorry, so what is the message here? Simply, elect council members who are intelligent and also have the most extended city experience. It's simply just that.
Mr. Antalis, was there anyone else in the center who wants to make a comment on anything not being voted on this evening? Anyone to the right? That concludes our first public comment. Moving on to our second public comment. This is for anything, ordinance or resolution that council is voting on this evening. No one has signed up in advance, so again, I'll go around the room. Anyone to the left who wants to make comment on anything that council is going to be voting on tonight? I turn to the center. Mr. Shannon.
Part three. I do enjoy these trifectas. Belshire, Eden Avenue. Woolworth Building. Due to a personal kerfuffle right before the meeting, I don't have my written
statement. Mr. Shire, we're not voting on...
Oh, you're not voting on it tonight?
No, we're not voting on 555 Main Street tonight.
Oh, okay, so what was sent out on Friday has been changed.
I don't believe it was up.
I'm basing my understanding on the email I got on Friday about the agenda for tonight.
I'm happy to figure that out with you after the meeting to see where there might be a miscommunication.
Okay.
I didn't see it on any agenda, but just for the record, 555 Main Street will not be.
Okay.
It's not on the agenda to vote on tonight.
As Gilda Radner used to say on Saturday Night Live, never mind.
Still got your third trip in, though, Mr. Shire. Is there anyone else in the center who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on tonight, Mr. Faber?
Are you guys voting on your wage increases?
Yeah, that's on the agenda.
I just
want to
talk about that. Right. Harry Faber? So at the last meeting, we talked about, I listened to what you guys said as to why the reasoning for increasing the wages. And I think I totally understand where you're coming from as, yeah, not making any money is a hard barrier to becoming a council member. I can totally understand that. But I don't think that increasing it by the $3,000 is really going to aid in anything. And I think you guys really missed the mark, meaning that you're not addressing the actual issue. Why is it that a council person can't live off of the wage, or why can't the mayor live off, I mean, the mayor even said that he can live off of his $90,000, and you guys still voted, except for Cologne, obviously, I remember you, and Cramsey Smith also rejected that. But it's not a matter of how much money you guys are being paid. What is money? Money is a reflection of your time, and it is also a double meaning. It is what you are able to buy, to purchase, and you can't survive off of $10,000 a year or $7,000. But the problem itself isn't how much money you have, it's that our system, despite being so abundant in resources, is not providing for the people. It's not that you guys aren't being paid enough, it's that we are not providing what the government should be providing. We should be taking care of our people. The people should be able to afford, through working a full-time position, should be able to live comfortably, to afford housing, to afford food, to afford childcare, to afford education, and that's just not the case. So by you guys paying yourselves a little bit increase of $3,000, it's not addressing the root cause of the issues. The issues is the fact that we live under an imperialist system, a capitalist system, where we prioritize the wealth and the abundance, the kingly lifestyle, the royal lifestyle of our bourgeois, our ruling class, at the expense of the working people. And that's the problem right there. It's not that you guys need to be paid more money. That's not going to really incentivize or get better quality candidates on council. That's not going to address anything. That's not going to fix it. We need to provide for the people. Increasing your guys' wages isn't going to do anything. And also, the mayor said he doesn't want a wage increase. So I'm still a little baffled that five of you still decided that, hey, let's vote for an increase. He's going to reject it. It's just silly. You're not even listening. I mean, someone came, he's not here today, but he brought a petition with over 150 people saying, hey, I don't think it's right that we're increasing our wages because you guys are the only people in this room with that privilege. So why? You're ignoring the voice of the people, the word of the people who spend their finite time, the opportunity cost that it takes for them to be here. They could be doing anything else, but they come to speak their mind despite how anxiety-inducing and difficult it is to be up here. I've been coming here for a year, and let me tell you, it is still, every time I get, my heart palpitates, I have tremendous anxiety, it doesn't get easier. But people come here, and they speak because these issues are important. And the fact that after how many people, I mean, there was maybe one, two people that came up and said they were in support of it, compared to the large majority, you guys vote in opposition of the people who come, that speak, that are actually caring, that want to see their will represented by you guys, and you guys rejected time and time again. People came, they wanted a ceasefire resolution. People came, they wanted a welcoming city resolution. People came, and they said $7,000 is enough. And yet you guys, you might not get paid this time. Some of you are up for re-election. Doesn't matter. That's not the point. You guys aren't providing what government should provide. Government should provide for the people, make the quality of life easier. We should be working together in order to increase the quality of life, provide for people so that we are not, I mean, we still have so many homeless people. People are in poverty. We have how many universities in Bethlehem, and what are we doing? You know, and they're private institutions, obviously. And I had a conversation at one of the housing meetings. And one of the council members said, oh, you know, this is the system of private property. That's the problem. That's the problem. The people who own everything dictate everything. We need a system, and we need to work towards a system where we are here to be self-reliant and take care of one another. And that's just, it's problematic. You guys paying yourselves $3,000 more isn't going to get better people in your position, and it's not going to do anything. So stop acting like it is. And again, I'm fine with the controller. The mayor doesn't need any more money. He's making a living wage. And you guys, you're public servants. This isn't supposed to be easy. You guys speak up here. You might meet. I've gone out to coffee with a couple of you, right? That's it. And half of you, not half, two of you, a lot of the time, don't even read the stuff that you're supposed to come prepared for. You guys don't need more money. Thank you,
Mr. Faber. Is Mr. Carrizola?
I'm Marty Curatola, 813 Lawford Street in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And my door is always unlocked. If you're a hood out there, be careful. Because I know how to throw a shooting star, and I know how to.
Mr. Curatola, something on the agenda, please.
The thing is, we're talking about the city council situation. Our mayor knows, and he feels it's more than enough money from what he's getting. But city council, it's not a full-time position. Most of you have other jobs, and you can write books, you can do whatever you want. You can go ahead and make public appearances and get money on internet and on TV. You could be on the Drew Barrymore show, whatever. But the thing is, you don't need, actually, I agree with here in italics what he stated last meeting, I should say. The school board, they volunteer. They don't get paid nothing. They volunteer. We can have just as effective people on city council without being paid a penny. People who want to serve their country, whether it's city, state, town, federal. The thing is, in all cities, all over, city council should be just like the school board. Don't accept any money. Give yourself to be here. Show that you love the people, that you're for the people. Raise? No. Be an example. Say, we don't want no money. We're doing it for the people. Then you're an example to all cities all over the United States and even in other countries. City councils should be like the school board. You're doing it because you want to be helping the people. That's pretty much all I got to say. God bless you.
Thank you, Mr. Curatola. Is there anyone else in the center who wants to make comment on anything being voted on tonight? Turn to the right. Anyone to the right wants to make comment on anything being voted on tonight? That concludes tonight's public comment. Moving on to old business. Any old business for members of council? Any new business for members of council? Start with Councilwoman Cramsey Smith.
I just had two questions related to, I guess, codes and zoning. I'm not sure, maybe Ms. Collins. I was wondering what the status is of the street, the building on Main Street that was condemned.
So my understanding is that the property was condemned about 2 weeks ago. We've made contact with the property owner multiple times since then, and most recently, I believe just yesterday, sent out a violation notice, or a notice at least, documenting that previous history and setting a timeline by which they have to make the corrections to the structural issues of the building to at least allow it to be, to remove the condemned sign.
Because I know I talked to Mr. Stimes and he said he was going to have an engineer going. I'm just concerned about naturally the safety of both the area in general, the front and the back.
Sure. So, immediately upon the call, which came in on a Saturday, and fire responded and then called Mr. Simonson out. That was the initial observation was certainly for the life safety issues, and it was at that time, and then also I think shortly thereafter with an initial structural investigation. That was commissioned by us that determined they did need to condemn it in the immediate term. And at that point, then the obligation shifts to the property owner to do a full structural analysis and then come up with a plan to stabilize the building. And so that's where we are in the process.
And how long do they have? How long does the owner have to respond
to the call?
I think the letter said 7 days.
I believe it was 7 days from yesterday.
Okay, great, thank you. And the other question that I think maybe for you is, in the committee meeting, people spoke of the lawsuit regarding the one short-term rental. I think it was on Church Street?
Yes.
Okay. Is that closed now, or what's the status of that?
That has been going on for quite some time, actually, even before I started in the role in January of 2022. And the speaker was correct that the city has been very active working with those residents, and they do have their own counsel, but also at various stages in litigation. I don't recall the full court history, but suffice to say that we've been to just about every level of court and have fought it along the way. We have continued to see some violations, and my understanding is that as recently as last week, we were working with the Law Bureau on sending out another violation notice. So I'll have to check if that's gone out, but it's still an active situation.
Oh, okay, because my understanding was the way they spoke that they won a lawsuit and that it had to be shut down as a short term. So is that's not the case, that they still are a short term rental?
They're not supposed to be. That's the problem.
They're not supposed to be.
Right. And so we're, again, pursuing enforcement of
shutting it down.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other new business from members of council? Councilman Laird?
My apologies if this should have been old business. Slipped by quickly. I just wanted to briefly mention that we are working on putting together a neighborhood conversation for the radius surrounding the potential rezoning of 11 and 15 West Garrison. We've had some productive conversations with the developers there and are working on finding a site, but there will be a neighborhood conversation with the intended audience of the people who live in the immediate vicinity. It'll be not a hearing, not a city hall meeting. It'll be in the neighborhood so that we can make sure that everybody is heard all the way around that conversation. So that will happen before our next city council meeting.
Thank you. Any other new business for members of council? We're going to continue on. Communications, we only have two this evening. Mr. Miller, 6A.
March 11th, 2025, memorandum with the proposed resolution from Assistant City Solicitor Matthew Deschler. Attorney Deschler recommends a contract for legal services with Stag, Deuza, LLC, and Florio, Carucci, Steinhardt, Capelli, and Tipton, LLC for legal representation. Litigation against manufacturers and distributors of products containing substances known as forever chemicals. There are class action lawsuits pending against chemical manufacturers. Retaining these law firms will enable the city to explore participating in recovery pools in these lawsuits. The contract for services is a contingent fee agreement, meaning that the city does not incur legal expenses unless money is recovered.
And resolution 10A is on the agenda tonight. 6B.
March 12, 2025, memorandum and attached resolution from Lori Giglio, Grants Administrator for the Department of Community and Economic Development. Ms. Giglio seeks support to apply for a $30,000 grant to the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources. This money would be used for the development and construction of the Greenway at 3rd and New Streets.
And resolution 10B is on the agenda tonight. Moving on to reports. I have two brief things to report to council and everyone. First, I should have announced at the top of the meeting, agenda item 10D tonight. That's the certificate of appropriateness for 306 South New Street. That applicant withdrew their certificate of appropriateness. They had emailed as the city hall earlier, it was communicated to Mr. Miller and then myself. So we will not be voting on 10D this evening. And then, a couple meetings ago, referencing 555 Main Street, as someone had brought up during public comment, we had referred the matter back to HARB. I did just want to update everyone. It's not scheduled yet to come back to a council agenda, but HARB did send a memo over to me just advising that they were pleased to report that there's been productive discussion between the applicant and HARB. The applicant further agreed to prepare a revised application based on some of the discussions that have been continuing to be had at the March HARB meeting, and that they may come back as early as April, the April HARB meeting, or it could be after that. But those discussions are ongoing for that certificate of appropriateness
that we had sent back down for a recommendation from HARC. And that update comes from the Historic Architectural Review Board. So that's all I had this evening. Mr. Spurk or Mr. Alcohol, anything on behalf of the mayor tonight?
No report, President.
Thank you, Mr. Spurk. Councilwoman Kwiatek.
Thank you. The Community Development Committee met earlier this evening at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. We reviewed for possible amendments several code enforcement ordinances and had a presentation from the city about code enforcement and inspection, and learned a lot about what is being done currently and opportunities for improvement. And we took no action. Hillary Kwiatek, Chairperson, Community Development Committee.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Moving on to ordinances for final passage. Mr. Miller, Bill 16, 2025.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Ordinance 2017-01, establishing the salaries of members of council and president of council. Bill number 16, 2025, is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Any discussion on 8A? The council and council president's salary. Councilman Wilhelm?
Yes. As the council person who put these amendments forward, this is our third public meeting about it, and so I've said many of these things already, but I see new people in the audience today. So I won't say everything I've said every time, but I do want to clarify a couple of things. First of all, very fine point. The person who came to the last meeting who brought a petition approached us after the meeting and said they had changed their mind because they listened to the comments. There were aspects of this proposal that they didn't understand. I will say I do have respect for folks who can come in and have their minds changed. It's not my goal to change anyone's minds. It's a vote that we have to make here. I also want to acknowledge, as I had before, it's uncomfortable to have to vote on the salaries of the folks who sit in your position. None of us chose for the process to be as such. None of us chose for council to be a paid position. None of us chose for school board not to be paid. I'm quite sure that if we had the prerogative to honor our school board members with the salary, we would, because we know that they work very hard. These are the processes, and this is how it has to work. I'll just state for those who are unaware that a city council person earns $7,200 in a year. That salary has been the same for 16 years. The only way to address, evaluate, and increase those salaries is this process. We have to put forward a memo, and we did so, I did so, for all elected positions, controller, mayor, and count, for those three elected positions at once. I guess I'll talk about mayor. Can I just say something about the mayor? The mayoral salary has remained the same for 12 years, controller for 16 years. These are crucial positions. But the thing I really want to make sure that new folks here know is that none of us is guaranteed to benefit from this salary increase. It doesn't take effect unless you are elected, newly elected, or re-elected to your seat. So in fact, you know, I least of all up here will stand to benefit from it, as I'm not, my term is up in January and I'm not running for re-election. So I acknowledge that. I also acknowledge, you know, a $3,000 increase over 16 years. Yes, it's a small amount, but I think it's important. I certainly myself have never said that this increase will draw better candidates. That's not my perspective. That's not what I believe. What I believe is that it's the least we can do to make this position slightly more accessible to more people. We are fortunate if we have a full-time job to accompany this and have the time to devote. It's not uncommon, as has been mentioned here, that this role, if you're really putting your heart into it, is easily 10 to 20 hours on top of whatever other work, raising a family, full-time work, multiple jobs. And so I just feel strongly, as uncomfortable as it is, that this is the right thing to do. I respect how the vote turns out. It's not going to benefit me either way. But I just
because of the strange optic nature of it, I just want people to understand that the insinuation that we are lining our own pockets is not only antithetical to the intent and spirit of it, it is factually incorrect. So I really just wanted to make sure everybody here knows that. And by all means, have your own opinion about it. But those are some things I wanted to clarify before we take the vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other comments from members of council? Seeing none, Mr. Miller, call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Nay.
Ms. Buyatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird.
Aye.
Ms. Leon.
Nay.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Aye.
Mr. Callahan.
Nay.
And Mr. Colon.
Aye. Passes 4-3. Bill 17-2025.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Ordinance 2017-03, establishing the salary of the Controller. Bill number 17-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Any discussion from members of council? Our City Controller, Mr. Yasso, is here, so I'm going to give him an opportunity to address council, but I wanted to see any comments from members of council before I give Mr. Yasso an opportunity. Mr. Yasso, please.
Thank you. Good evening. I am here tonight as the current city controller, and I am going to be asking council to vote nay on the increase for that salary. In the event that the vote does not go that way, I have taken the step to talk to the mayor to ask him if he would consider using his executive veto power the same way he has considered using it on himself. And him, our conversation, he understood where I was coming from and agreed that he would. However, I am hopeful to kind of avoid that path. I think it's important that we have this conversation tonight, especially because I do agree with the spirit of the increase. Although I'm going to kind of fiercely oppose it, I do, especially with Councilwoman Wilhelm, I know it is not in an enviable position to be in. She kind of, I think, took this on her shoulders where nobody really wanted to. So I do appreciate her for doing it. I certainly do not think that this is in any way, shape, or form a money grab by any in particular person. However, that being said, I am here tonight to try to convince you guys to reverse the vote that you made 2 weeks ago. And I'll start by apologizing for not being here to address you guys 2 weeks ago. As Michael told you guys, my wife and I did welcome our first child into the world on that Sunday, 2 days before. It was 2 days prior to the meeting, but it was also 7 weeks prior to her due date. So, we're still in the NICU today, 16 days in. The question everybody always asks right away is, how's mom and the baby? Everyone's fine. Mom is wonderful, baby is wonderful. And of course, anyone who's experienced, the top rate care that, and any NICU nurse would provide. But, for me personally, the NICU nursing staff at St. Luke's Anderson campus has been there are no words I have for the incredible level of care they provided to myself and my family in the last 16 days. We are still dealing with that. I knew I had to be here tonight. I think it's important that we have this conversation. I'm hoping to come to an understanding with everybody that we can all feel good about at the end of the evening, and including the interested parties that are not actually elected officials. I did call Kara and Michael from the hospital. I did the morning of the meeting to let them know I wouldn't be attending. I kind of gave them both my position in opposition to it. They gave me theirs, all I could do really was was get back to what I was doing, and then tune in for the meeting later that night. I watched the YouTube stream from the hospital room, And I obviously the vote did not go how I, you know, how I wanted it to result. Now my wife, who was watching me watch my phone in the hospital room, who, you know, she works very hard. Also, she's a special education teacher for Northeast Middle School in the Beth Mary School District, right at Northeast, you know, right down the road. You know, so she's watching me watch my phone and thinking, oh, this is awesome. We're getting a raise. Look at where we go. You know, Grace, what the hell? You know, but my wife does not. She does not bear the fiduciary, the moral, or the ethical responsibilities that I have as the elected city controller and an elected official here. You know, that next day I did leave the hospital and I went to talk to the mayor. That conversation, like I said, was brief, but I do hope by explaining where I'm coming from tonight that we can get to a result and we can avoid the veto and you know, expiration of a subsequent council vote to try to reverse that, okay? So I am here to explain myself. I'm going to kind of start. It was suggested in one of the previous public comments, not tonight, but it was kind of, it was talked about again tonight, you know, that because the city council accepts money and it is paid for their bowls, that somehow it is not to be considered a calling but an obligation. And I thought that was a cheap shot. I have a pretty good idea of everybody that sits up there, all of you that sit up there, and I am fairly confident that nobody up here is doing this job to enrich themselves or certainly looking to make money with all the time that you guys spend doing the things that you do. Yes, there are many paths to making money, and sitting up there on city council is not one of them. And I do know for a fact that this proposal brought forth by Ms. Wilhelm is not, as I said before, any type of money grab or meant to enrich themselves or anybody up here. And I do believe in the spirit. Again, that's why I'm talking. And while I thought that was a cheap shot, it did make me think. I thought about, you know, what I was going to say to get you guys to reverse action. And it brought me immediately to recall my personal favorite city council person and one of my favorite people of all time, and that was Michael Schwader. He served three terms, starting kind of in the late 90s into the early 2010s, so in that time frame. And you know, we lost Mr. Schwader in January of 2021. He passed much too young. But I remember when that comment was made, I remembered an article, and I remember when he announced that he was not going to seek a fourth term after his third term. And the quote he said was that serving as a city councilman for him was a calling and not a career. And I thought about it immediately when I heard that. And so I thought about him extensively when I thought about what I would say tonight. And Mr. Schwader's service on city council, I know, came from a place of true pride in the city that he called home and was so deeply rooted in through generations. It was never an obligation to him. It absolutely was a calling and a desire to do his part, to impart his knowledge and experience to better the city of Bethlehem. It was never about enriching himself personally, but bettering the situation of all city residents. And I can identify with that. I thought about that when I thought about how I wanted to address you guys, because most of it really centers around that idea. I think that all of you, and I certainly consider my service as a calling, an honor, and a privilege, and not a career or an obligation. I mentioned earlier my moral, ethical, and fiduciary responsibilities as an elected official and as the elected controller. When this meeting occurred 2 weeks ago, I was actively circulating petitions, and as we meet this evening, I've already turned in that completed petition packet and secured my position on the 2025 ballot for Bethlehem City Controller. Now, Ms. Wilhelm mentioned just earlier that nobody is guaranteed to personally or individually benefit from any of these ordinances passed. I feel that I am almost certain to benefit from it, personally and individually, as I have secured that spot. I have no intentions of withdrawing my name, and I have full intention of being the city controller for the next 4 years. And because I believe that it ties this ordinance directly to me, I feel it is my moral and ethical obligation and my fiduciary responsibility to do everything in my power to make sure that the vote tonight is nay, and that I do not individually benefit. Because to sit here and say nothing, right, or to just try my best to give Michael a call or give Kira a call and say, hey, you know, I really don't think it's right, is not enough. It is not upholding ourselves to that standard, right, to that high level standard that we should, right, as elected officials. And I feel like if I fail in that tonight, then I have not lived up to that. You know, if I were to, as I believe I will, stand in front of you guys later this year, right, whoever happens to be here, some of you most definitely will, and go over the controller's budget as I do, and you guys have all seen me in the past talk to you guys about our budget, right? If anything, we have scaled down and become more efficient in the years that I've been here. You know, with myself and Michelle Liberto, and Michelle Ann Millward, we strive to provide a very, very high quality product at a bargain price, right, for the city. And that is by design, and we are very, very proud of it. We work very, very hard to do so. You know, Michelle make a lot of sacrifices with their time, and it is very important to us. And if I, you know, sit here and say nothing, you know, what credibility do I have? What credibility do I have with any of you guys when I come in October or November and say, oh yeah, here's the controller's budget. Oh, this extra $7,000. Well, yeah, that's going into my pocket because of an ordinance that we passed earlier in the year. But technically, I was not 100% guaranteed to benefit. But here I am. Here I am individually benefiting from this. What credibility do I have with council? Right? What credibility do I have with Michelle, with my own employees, who we talk about, and I talk to them about how working in that office is an honor and it is a privilege, not an obligation, and that we have to uphold our standards higher than anybody else, and we have to strive for that. How do I reconcile that with them if I show up for the next 4 years, you know, with my pockets lined a little bit extra, right? How does it happen? How do I have any credibility with the mayor or any of the other employees inside City Hall? How do I have credibility with someone like Eric Evans when I want to go, you know, get on his back about the job he's doing, right? How do I have credibility with all the people that signed my petition for my upcoming campaign? How do I have credibility with the police and the fire pension boards that I sit on as a voting member? And most importantly, how would I have any credibility with anybody in the city that pays taxes? Right, the very people that I'm sworn to represent as a fiduciary agent, if I sit and say nothing and then only to individually benefit later on. And if I let that happen, I feel like I have not lived up to those moral, ethical, or fiduciary standards. I am going to go one step further tonight, and I apologize for the lengthy time. It's already been a long time, but I feel it's appropriate to also let everyone know that this petition packet that I submitted will be the last. At that point, if I am lucky enough to secure the honor and privilege of serving as the Bethlehem City Controller for another 4 years, it will be the final 4 years. At that point, I will have served three full terms on top of the partial term that when Mr. DiGiacinto passed and I was appointed by City Council, I served a partial term, and then I did serve, if I'm lucky enough, this will be 3 full terms. At which point I think it's sufficient time. And so why would I announce this now, as I announce that I've secured my spot on the ballot and fully expect to be elected, and then on the same night announce that I will essentially be a lame duck and I will not pursue this job any further past that. And there are several reasons. The first is...
Can you be concise with those reasons, Mr. Yasso?
Can I be concise? Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
However, I do feel it's important.
I understand.
And the first reason is that because of that, there will no longer be a conflict of interest for me. So even though Ms. Wilhelm would not be here to bring this forward again, should it get voted down, if it is brought forward at any time in those 4 years that I am controller, I will not stand in the way. I will not have a conflict of interest because of, as opposed to right now, where I almost definitely would benefit personally from this ordinance. At any time in the next 4 years, if it's passed, that the newly elected or next elected controller would receive it, then I am guaranteed to not individually benefit from it. Okay? That's reason number one why I'm announcing it now. Number two is it's not a decision I am going to wrestle with. I just as sure as I am that my work is not done yet, I am also resolute in that at the end of that time, I will have had the sufficient time and will not pursue another term. Third reason is that I just personally believe in term limits. There is not a term limit on the city controller position, so I choose to self-impose because I believe in term limits. I personally think there should be term limits across the board, as kind of the theme of this speech is, it is not meant, this privilege, right, and this honor to be in these type of autonomous and positions of public trust, I don't think are meant to be held by any one person over an extended amount of time. And there is certainly no monopoly on good ideas, and there should not be a monopoly on a position such as this, just because somebody has the means and the ability to hold on to it as long as they can, I don't think they should. And the last reason, Mr. Clone, I will wrap it up for you, is that I don't want to have any regrets about my service. And I know I would regret staying too long. I think I would. So putting a limit on it, I think eliminates that. As I said before, I'm very proud of the product we provide, and I want that to continue from start to finish. And I don't want it to end for any other reason. I've, in this, closing in on what will be, my third term, which would be almost 15 years, 14 years total, if I'm lucky enough to do it all. I have not accepted or asked for or given out $1 in campaign contributions. I understand that it is kind of comes with the territory, right? Everyone needs to kind of raise money. You have to have money to be elected. But I have not. And it is true that after I was appointed in the subsequent elections, I was never challenged. And sure, could anybody at any time, including this latest election, have come along and might I have been susceptible to a challenger because I raised no money and asked for no money? Maybe. Right? Maybe. But all I can tell you is that I never felt it necessary or felt the need to accept or give out any money. And I don't blame anyone for ever doing it, but because I have been able to, we've been able to draw a definitive line in the sand that we don't accept any money. The City of Bethlehem Controller's Office owes nobody anything other than the taxpaying citizens that we represent. And that the opportunity that you guys will give me by a no vote tonight will allow me to finish my service, I think, without any regrets. And I think avoid a more divisive conclusion with a mayor's veto, again, because I know the spirit behind this was the right one. I hope that we can kind of all come to a decision tonight that we're all comfortable with, and maybe at least most of the interested parties, even not up here but who spoke and who may be interested at home, can feel good about as well. So one last time, and I'll wrap it up, I will ask for your please and thank you for your nay vote tonight for the salary increase for city control.
Thank you, Mr. Yasso. And congratulations again to you and your family. So with all that said, I'll turn back to council for questions or comments. So I'll start with Councilwoman Puyatek.
Thank you. I appreciate everything that Mr. Yasso said, but I really have to take exception with the idea that, once again, that it's voting raises for ourselves. Because what we're really looking at, and maybe this is just 15 years of working in a human resources office, we're looking at the positions, and are they appropriately compensated? Every position, if you work for a good employer, has been evaluated and has, based on duties, based on, you know, time spent, all of those kinds of things, the level of executive, you know, sort of abilities that you have to have, the decision making, all of that. And it is very unusual for any position to sit for 16 years, and if Mr. Yasso got a no vote on this, 20 years without an increase, because what happens is that creates compression. So that's what's happened with the mayor's salary, in fact, because all along, all of the people who work for the city, who either belong to a union that has a collective bargaining agreement or is a member of the, you know, administrative staff that also gets, you know, set raises, has been getting 3%, 4% a year. And so with all of that, as well as the ability for some of them to make overtime, we have many, many people in the city who make far more than the mayor or far more than the controller. And certainly on an hourly basis, far more than city council members do. If you just think that, even if you take the average between 10 and 20 hours a week, it's about 15 hours a week. With the raise, I think the hourly wage would be still less than $14 an hour. And that, you know, is obviously above minimum wage, which is great, but I think we all agree that, you know, the city should be paying what we would hope would be a living wage. And so I also just want to take exception with the concept that part-time work isn't worthy of reasonable pay and appropriate pay, because some people put together multiple part-time jobs, as many of you know, because some of you do it yourself, to make up, you know, enough money to get by on. And so a part-time wage isn't, you know, to be looked on as something that's, well, we don't have to increase those, not even after 16 or 20 years. And finally, I would say that, you know, Mr. Yasso mentioned his amazing wife, and I wish you all so much the best, and that she's a special education teacher, which is incredible. And that's a calling for her, but that doesn't mean that she shouldn't be compensated for it. And that is how we, you know, compensate people in our society, because, Mr. Faber, we are still in a capitalist society. That is what we do. So again, I look at this as, these are the positions. This is what, you know, these are what the salary bands have been for these positions for 16 years and 12 years for the mayors. And that's why I believe that the controller's position, as well as the council people and the mayor's position, that those positions and salaries do need to get increased.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other questions or comments for Councilwoman Leo?
I have a question for the solicitor. I think that the question of credibility, and I'm not one to tell anybody about their credibility, is the fact that it's our vote and not his, so he has no direct say. But he did bring up something interesting to me. He has no opponent now. There is no Republican opponent. What about in situations like that, when you are guaranteed specifically to get that money because you have no opponent in the Democratic race, you have no opponent in the Republican race? Again, not specific to this, because, you know, he doesn't have a direct vote in this. I'm just out of curiosity, how does that situation work?
if I understand your question correctly, essentially it's council's decision whether or not a position should be given an increase or in fact a decrease. It's also permitted under law. Now, it's intended to be blind in that you need to cast your vote with regard to a salary change prior to the last day for withdrawing nominations. Now, I understand we have one candidate unopposed. That does not change the landscape. All right.
Thank you for that clarification. Of all of the salaries that we're voting on, I'm the most passionate about this one. I think this is the one that, if we're going to pick one, I think it's this one. And it's not because of, it's honestly because it's the position itself. And it won't be you in 4 years, but there might not be an appetite on council to address this again. This is a very difficult thing to address. It's very rare that we have someone who only serves one term and then on their way out is willing to put this on their shoulders. It is, and historically, at least I looked back on council raises. It's why I know the first mayor got like $2,000. And I think maybe a vote here is more about the next council historically looking back and saying that there was at least an appetite for this. All that being said, I hear you. I hear what you're saying, especially if you're going to invoke veto anyway.
Councilwoman Wilhelm?
I won't restate what was already said, but I concur with what's already been said. And Mr. Yasso knows I have the utmost of respect for him and his work. We have benefited from his close eye and his department. Again, point of clarification that I put the memo forward before we knew that there would only be one person on the ballot for controller. So this was not just to underscore that this was about the position, that it's been 16 years, it's time to look at it. It's the will of council, it's not up to me. I benefit certainly not in this case either, but I just wanted to clarify and really underscore that it's about the position and not the person. And with all due respect for everything Mr. Yasso just said, I will continue to vote aye, knowing that the timing and the veto process means that it won't happen. But you know, sometimes, as was discussed earlier, we vote based on what we firmly believe in, based on our research, based on our perspective, our conversations, what we believe is right, even if we know it won't pass. And that's certainly what you'll see me doing tonight.
Any other questions or comments? Councilman Francis Smith.
I just want to say a huge congratulations again. And I know that you are a dedicated, stellar, I hate to say employee, but department head, as well as your department, as I've met with you several times, and I'm really impressed. But I really am even more impressed with how noble you are after how you spoke tonight. And I have to say that your little girl is really lucky to have a great dad. You are more than deserving to have the increase, but I will respect your wishes and vote against it.
Any other questions or comments from members of council? So before we call the roll, I'll just give a quick comment to sort of procedure, and our solicitor could correct me if I'm wrong, because it was discussed about the executive veto. We are up against certain timelines. This was brought up on the floor of council 2 weeks ago with Mayor Reynolds, when he had stated his intent of for the mayor's salary using the executive veto, which is his right as the mayor of the city. Or he also had referenced it also tonight. So what that would look like is, again, I've never dealt with it in my decade on council, but just for everyone's awareness, it would involve, so every time we pass something, I sign it as the president of council, or the president of council, whoever that would be, would sign it, and any ordinance is signed by the mayor to affect that ordinance. The mayor has the right to do an executive veto, which then would send it back to council, and council would have to take another vote on it. And then I believe supermajority would be the term, Stewart, would have to vote in support of it to override the veto. Where we're at, kind of procedurally, for everyone following along, is should the mayor move forward with his plans to use his veto power that he has as the mayor, or every mayor has, for the mayor's salary,
and potentially the controller's salary, that puts us, that wouldn't come back to council then until the next council meeting, and then the next council meeting is beyond the prescribed deadline for when council would have to invoke anything. So it's not that it wouldn't pass, we could still, but it would just be null and void, I guess is how we put it. Is that fair to say? And we'd be out of compliance with the state, we'd be out of compliance with the state statute.
Without your time, you'd be outside the timing to pass.
So I just want to make sure everyone's aware of that. So the, as it relates to the salary increases for the controller, for the mayor, for council, we just had a vote on council and saw how that went. For controller, I would echo that what was said by other members of council, in any kind of operation over, you only have to look 16 years or 12 years, over 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, 4 years, you're going to see some kind of wage increase for anyone who's being compensated. There's no one in, and I always advise everyone, look at your budget book. Every city position is outlined in the budget book. There is no person who occupies the same position today who's occupied it for years whose compensation hasn't changed. If anything, maybe turnover in a position, a new person comes in at a lower salary, things like that. But the positions themselves, you know, over time are compensated more. So that's created this dilemma, as we talked about, as Councilman Wilhelm brought forward, where when do you do it? Because you could always have these different opinions. We heard Mr. Yasso's, we've heard other members of councils, we've heard the mayors before and such. So all that to say, people can fall on it where they would, where they will. I do believe that these positions themselves do deserve the salary increase, but as the president of council, I also want to look at what the processes, what the procedures are for things, and just knowing that it's just setting up something that then is going to put us out of what the state ordinance says. I'll be a no vote on it, and that's primarily because of just the timeline of what these votes look like, and I want to be clear on that. And I do hope that whatever happens with these votes, with a veto on this position, the next position we're going on, whatever it would be, should it not pass now, I would hope the future councils, whoever is on there, would consider this, because I do think it is time for that, but I also understand sort of we're up against certain timelines and procedural obstacles, that even if it's the will of council, there are other rights with the executive branch of the city, that may not happen. And I also echo what I said last time. I think it's good that I've never seen a veto, and the one thing we're talking about someone vetoing is their own salary increase. I think there's worse things to argue about as a city than people saying, no, I don't want to raise. So that kind of gives me some comfort too, but that's my position on that. Councilman Laird?
Just a question procedurally. I forget how often the initial step of circulating a memo, like, can that happen again next year?
Yeah.
So it could be brought back up within one.
So once and Attorney Stewart can correct me if I'm wrong, but once the controller, the mayor, and members of council take the oath of office, then yes, we could revisit salary. Again, those people who are sworn in would not be affected by that term. The controller doesn't have a term limit. You heard Mr. Yasso express his future intentions, and there's still a mayoral election to happen, so I won't speak to the outcome of that, but I will remind everybody that there are term limits for any mayor in the city of Bethlehem.
Thank you.
Anything else from members of council? Mr. Miller, we'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Nay.
Ms. Leon?
Nay.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Nay.
Mr. Colon?
Nay.
The controller salary fails, 5 nays with 2 in favor. Mr. Miller, Bill 18-2025.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem and Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Ordinance 2017-02, establishing the salary of the mayor. Bill number 18-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Laird and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? So Mayor Reynolds isn't here tonight, as we've addressed. His intentions were well communicated. Mr. Spurk, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add on the mayor's behalf tonight.
He's had no change in his intentions. He intends to veto any attempt to raise the salary.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Spurk. I will reiterate what I said a moment ago as it relates to the mayor of Bethlehem. The current salary is set at $90,500. That has been set for a long time. As we talk about salary compression, again, anyone could visit their budget books. I won't get into where the mayor falls on the hierarchy of compensation for city employees, but that margin will only continue, that only grow larger as it relates to recruitment and how many people run. I'm not gonna pretend to be able to say if this, then that, if not this, then that. I think it just comes down to what's fair compensation to be the chief executive for a $100 million budget. Again, I recognize procedurally, here we are. So while I do think the mayor, any mayor, deserves for the city of Bethlehem to be compensated higher, procedurally, to me, I'm not gonna get into the going up against the timeline that we would already not meet. So, and then council can revisit it to restate the answer to Councilman Laird, revisit it after whoever sworn in January for mayor, council, and controller. Councilman Wilhelm?
Just very quickly, I think one thing worth mentioning and adding to this, again, same comments as the prior vote, but this particular topic and the topic of council salaries, I believe has been brought up by more than one member of the public at all of the last budget meetings that we have when we approve the upcoming year budget, that when folks are sort of in that book and folks who are following along are looking through the book and realizing that, dozens of city employees make more than the mayor, how has city council's salary stagnated? In those moments, members of the public themselves have come forward and said, this is something worth considering. Again, that's not why, but it is just another point worth making that this perspective doesn't only come from behind this desk. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other comments from members of council? Councilwoman Leo?
I just want to make a point that since council's thing is kind of off the table, I hope that whatever council is going forward will make it a priority to address the mayor's salary and the controller's salary in the next coming years, because it does need to be adjusted.
Councilwoman Laird?
I will say I fully intend to bring those two back to the table early in the new year.
Great. Anything else before we vote? Mr. Miller?
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Nay.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Nay.
And Mr. Colon?
Nay. Bill 18-2025 fails with 4 opposed and 3 in favor. New ordinances, 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, County of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Article 141 of the codified ordinances entitled Sister City Commission by repealing the existing ordinance and replacing it in its entirety. Bill number 19-2025 is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion. Just briefly turn to a member of the administration, just go over what it is that we're amending with Article 141 briefly. Thank you, Ms. Angela.
Good evening. So very briefly, Article 141 as it's written right now was written by, I believe, in 1972, and it's been changed every once in a while. You'll see in the ordinance, passing certain things passed in 1985, 1989, certain amendments to that ordinance. When we first came on as an administration, we realized the Sister City ordinance really only talked about Tanabayashi, which was peculiar to us because there was at the time a total of 5 sister cities, with our 6th sister city being Bahia's Puerto Rico, which was established last year. That committee is very gung-ho, I will say, on workforce development, cultural exchange opportunities, and different things. And so questions had come to us about raising money and things like that, and we realized that the current ordinance, as it's written, really didn't have any details about how to do that. The current ordinance didn't even tell us how sister cities come into existence, how they're formalized. So we did research on that and realized sometimes a sister city was just formalized through a mayor's report. Sometimes there was a signed agreement, like Italy. But every sister city had its own way of being formalized. And in addition, they all have their own way of celebrating their relationship. So what we sought to do was just provide some guidance around formalizing a sister city relationship. We did speak to our friends of the Tanabayashi Bethlehem Sister City Commission just to see what they were open to. We didn't want to change the ordinance without letting them know, or kind of without letting them know why we were seeking to do it. We saw we were questioning whether we should change the ordinance as it was to be an umbrella ordinance, which is what you see here, or if they were attached to that ordinance as it was. We didn't want to tread on that, but we said, we could do a different ordinance if that's preferable. They said they did not mind. In fact, a lot of the current members really weren't even familiar with the current ordinance as it was, and they were favorable to just kind of creating an umbrella ordinance, which kind of encompasses the other sister city relationships. So you'll see that they're named here with the years of formalization. This commission is not a commission that would meet regularly. This is like if they, I think in the 90s there was like a sister city jubilee that was at Music Fest one time, so they all got together. So this commission would only meet with at least two members, or up to two members, I should say, of different sister city committees if they wanted to do something together. But really, all the sister city relationships would remain the same, largely the same, nothing would change. Essentially, this just allows them to formalize in the way that they see fit. And you'll see that under duties and procedures, they would have their own mission statement, their own elected officers, have their own scheduled meetings. The language we put here was around creating their own IRS-approved nonprofit if they wanted to go that route in terms of like fundraising, those kinds of things for their own endeavors, right? So we just wanted to include that language. And under self-sustaining operations, just tell them if there was something that they wanted the city to support, how they would do that. So our only intention was to kind of create some guidance for existing sister cities and in the future. With next administration or whoever else that will come after, just kind of leave some kind of a process and some guidance for others that might want to create sister city relationships. So that's what you see before you. Hopefully very non-controversial, but open to any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Santoro. Thank you for that background before we have any other further discussion or vote on it. Any discussion or comments from members of council? Councilman Leo?
I just want to say that's another example of the incredible work that you do behind the scenes that goes absolutely unacknowledged because people might not understand what your job is. I know your job has been thrown a lot of shade over the past couple years. It gets me a little hot. But this is just another example of real practical things that you're doing to empower people to dictate what they want for their own city. So if you don't hear it anywhere else, and I'm sure you do from some people, but if you don't hear it anywhere else, you're doing an amazing job. Thank you.
Any other discussion from members of council? I'll just say thank you, Ms. Santoro, for all the work, and really just, as you said, laying the groundwork and making this a little more formal, as opposed to this sister city was through mayor's report, this was through resolution. I know when the current volunteers to engage with our sister city in Puerto Rico went through a lot with that. So I just want to thank you, and then all the volunteers, not only with our newest sister city, but even the longer standing ones that I know. And we saw when we had some of our visitors from Germany a few years ago, just how, and even our recent intern that came over that spent time in City Hall and with the council office, how engaged our community is with our sister cities. So it's nice to see. Anything else from members of council? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Wittek?
Aye.
Ms. Layer?
Aye.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Callahan?
Aye.
And Mr. Flom?
Aye. Passed 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to resolutions. Resolution 10A.
It resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller and or such other city officials is deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized to execute agreements with Stag, Liuza, LLC, and Florio Ferrucci, Steinhardt, Capelli, and Tipton LLC for legal services. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Ms. Leone?
So I have two quick questions. One, how do we select the lawyers to do with this stuff? And two, is there any concern about, like, I don't know if this is a question for you, but with everything regarding waters and all this stuff going on, Mr. Boswell had brought up anti-slippage laws. Are we concerned that the anti-slippage laws that prevent stuff are going to go away as well? So I don't know if that question is for you, or if you want to take both.
The anti-slippage law is certainly not for me. the fee agreement before you generated from or arose from Stag Liuza and Florio Perucci reaching out to the city to explore this relationship. If you note, there's a provision in the agreement about how we're affirming that we didn't have like positive PFAS testing back in 2023. Just by way of some brief background, there was another law firm I won't get into because nothing came of that, but that had reached out to us before about this. But in that fee agreement, we would have had to make some representations about PFAS in the water, which we couldn't make because, you know, thankfully, we have had in the past, at least when we tested, have had undetectable levels of PFAS in our drinking water. So this agreement doesn't require us to make those representations. There are some class action settlements that are pending, and there are pools of money, and we want to explore whether some of that funding might be available for the city.
Thank you. That was really the heart of my question. Is I know there's been a couple of class action lawsuits. I was wondering why we got involved in this one. So thank you for that. And I guess to Mr. Spurk about anti-slippage, I can talk to Mr. Boswell offline.
Yeah, and I would recommend that. We had a number of law firms that wanted us to sign up and join class action lawsuits that were already underway about PFAS. But as Mr. Petro said, because our numbers were so low, we couldn't sign on and represent that we were in some way in that situation. However, this law firm said, well, that's not what we do. We just make it our business to discover every potential class action lawsuit that is out there. And some may be applicable to you even in your lower levels. And if they do, we'll bring it to your attention.
Thank you.
And Florio Perucci, they have a local presence, but they're partnering with Stag Liuza, and this is kind of like one of their specialties. So they do a lot of this kind of work.
I will go to Councilwoman Laird. And I'll just recognize at the lectern is Mr. Deschler, an assistant solicitor with the city.
Hopefully.
He is indeed, yes.
Yeah. So for anyone unfamiliar with Mr. Deschler.
I'm just thinking about that.
Would entering into any of these class action lawsuits at this point, when we don't have recording of PFAS levels at a dangerous level in our water, prevent us from acting in any future lawsuits if new discoveries like we didn't know that some chemical that we use is dangerous, right? And now we've learned that, but we already were in this class action lawsuit. Are we prevented from further litigation if we follow through with this?
Right. To be clear, again, this agreement is designed more to enable the city to explore whether there's money available. They've had kind of settlements conducted already, and we didn't get involved in those because we couldn't verbally say that we had, for example, PFAS in drinking water. So the way it's been explained to me is that the existing or to be formed pools of money may be accessible by municipalities even if they don't have positive PFAS testing, perhaps. But we're just kind of looking into, this law firm will be looking into for us whether we can tap into those settlement pools when the time comes.
So
no, it does not preclude us from, if something arises in the future.
Okay, and if we would have the opportunity, like this legal firm would come to us and say, oh, we found this pool that you might be eligible for, and if there were clauses in there that we said, oh, actually, this would preclude us or something, we could opt out.
Yes. Not opt out, we would just not opt in.
That's
because we're not
right.
We're not in anything to opt out of.
Understood. Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Councilwoman Laird. Any other questions or comments? Councilwoman Francis.
Thank you. I heard what you said, but I guess I'm just wondering if we have undetectable levels now or even in the next year or so, how could we possibly be eligible? Like, can you explain that to me for the class action suit?
There's a deadline for these phase two settlement pools where you have to submit claims by January 1st, 2026. And I think there are maybe even some earlier deadlines for other matters, but I think that the DuPont 3M litigation is January 1st, 2026. Again, if we don't tap into those pools of money by that time, they're gone forever for us in this round. So again, this is just to kind of explore with these lawyers who specialize in this kind of work whether those monies are available for the city. So they'll look into it, and they'll tell us what they can do for us. But the purpose of entering into this relationship is to just make sure that we've preserved our options before deadlines expire.
And will it be an issue that maybe we have to have some level of detectable levels by January 1st? Or can it still be undetectable and we possibly still can be part of the class action suit?
Well, the class action suit has sort of already occurred. What we're talking about now is kind of whacking up the pie, so to speak. So, the answer to your question is, the law firm will look into that and let us know what they can do. There may be money available, even if we don't have PFAS levels, just as a means of protecting us in the future. That's not so much a question for me, but this is to sort of preserve our options in the event that, let's say, we do have PFAS detectable levels in the ensuing months. This stuff will be explored, looked into, and that law firm will report back to us what, if anything, they can do for us.
Okay. And I know you said there are other law firms that have approached us, because I looked at, just to be clear, I researched and I know the one is in New Orleans, but they look like they're the experts in this. And I guess I'm wondering why there needs to be two then. Why can't we just go with the Stag Lucia, however you say it, like Lucia? Why do we have to have the other law firm from New Jersey involved?
Well, again, Stagliuzza was partnering with Florio Perucci. In one way, kind of the more the merrier. This does not increase the fees, for example, to the city, just because we have two law firms involved.
Except that if there is a settlement, then we would have to give a percentage to both law firms, correct, versus just one?
No, the percentage would be a bulk percentage. They can split that however they...
So that would increase. It would just be one set percentage?
Correct.
Okay, all right. Because I know when we do contracts, we always try to look more local also. And again, I know I understand the one in New Orleans is very an expert, but I guess I'm asking if are there any more law firms in the state or local that would take this, that are experts? And I understand, given our undetectable levels, that that's an issue, but...
Florio Perucci does... multi-district or federal litigation. They do government work. They do civil litigation. It's a fairly large firm with presence in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, a number of attorneys. They have that local presence, so I think that's a benefit to entering into this agreement. I think perhaps the city hadn't been sort of like looking for these kind of arrangements just because of we're sort of in a beneficial spot with our, at least what we've had to date, relatively pristine drinking water. So that's why we've had some firms approach us, and in some cases we haven't been able to say we can go with you because we couldn't make those representations about the level of PFAS in drinking water to enter into what have been called phase one settlements. So they reached out to us. We looked into their background. It seemed like a decent fit, a decent agreement. We did work on the agreement a little bit, and we're presenting it to you because we do think the terms are fair to the city, and we do want to have a relationship with the law firm because we want to make sure that we don't miss the boat with any of these settlements in the event that there's money available.
Okay. I understand. I'm familiar with these lawsuits, and I know others that have come into the city and really greatly benefited the people, especially Bethlehem Steel and the mesothelioma and Pete Angelus and whatnot. Yep. But I just want to get all the information I can. The other conservative question I have is, I know the one attorney where Florio will be Steinhardt, is he still an elected official? Is that a conflict, or is that okay? Because what I read is that he's an elected official at the state level.
I don't know that. I I'm not aware of that. Douglas Steiner.
Okay, that's what I saw just tonight on the website. I just don't want any.
Is he the one who just became?
I know there's, you know, there's also a perceived conflict of interest with the law firm to begin with as far as contribution. So I just want to clear up that there's no conflict of interest.
He may
real
be,
or person.
He may be the one who's now the U.S. attorney.
Yeah, state senator, I believe, is what I saw.
He was, but I'm not so sure he did, just didn't get
what it. I saw it still is, so.
Well, at any rate, no. I mean,
okay, all right, as long as there's no conflict. That's all I have. Thank you.
And again, we're not paying them anything.
Right, I understand.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other comments or questions from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
Even though I don't think I'm legally supposed to, I'm going to recuse myself. My brother doesn't work for the law firm, but he does work for another entity that Ms. Pucci owns, so I'm going to be abstaining from the vote.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Any other comments?
Before we vote, we'll just know Mr. Boscola had reached out to me prior to tonight's meeting to advise he wouldn't be here, and just restated that from Mr. Boscola to me prior to tonight, just to date, there have been no detected levels of PFAS. I know it's been referenced a couple times already, but just wanted to make sure it was noted that Mr. Boscola had communicated that to me in advance of his absence tonight.
Any other questions or comments? We'll call the roll, Mr. Miller.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek.
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Mrs. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Abstain.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 6-0 with one member of council abstaining. Thank you, Mr. Schwer. Thank you, Mr. Deschler. And we'll go to Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the mayor and controller are authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a Community Conservation Partnerships Program grant the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources for development and construction of the Greenway, and that the mayor and controller are authorized to execute such other agreements and documents as deemed to be necessary and or related thereto. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon Chris Grimson Smith.
Discussion on 10B. We'll call the roll. Councilwoman Laird, do you have
something?
We'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Passed 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Certificate of Appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, is hereby granted for 1304 Spring Street to demolish the existing single-family dwelling. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
So before we get into discussion, I will just note that the Historic Conservation Commission's recommendation was to deny the certificate of appropriateness in the narrative that we had received for 1304 Spring Street. I was just confirming with our solicitor a few minutes ago, because I know sometimes when we're voting on, do you vote in the affirmative or the negative, the way the COA that's in our packets for 10C is written and presented, the resolution, Attorney Stewart said that to uphold the denial would be a vote in the negative, a nay would uphold the denial, and that a vote of aye would approve the resolution. So essentially, just look at it as aye is yes, it's okay to deny, nay, I did this last time. So let me just restate, to uphold the denial is a nay. If you want to uphold the denial, vote nay. If you want to approve, if you want to approve the COA is aye.
Correct.
I'll leave it at that, because then I at least finish my reading. And then I will note that the applicant is here also in attendance this evening. Any discussion from members of council?
Yeah.
Councilwoman Cramsey.
I'll just say, I mean, I'm not sure what the purpose is to demolish what they want to put in that area, but I did go by there, and I do respect the HCC and their work and their resolution on this. And I just have a real concern, because I just have a concern that we're really, again, losing the character of the city, because we just seem to be demolishing homes, especially homes that have, you know, historic character. And when I went down this street, you know, there's all single-family homes that have historic character, I believe, and I just really can't find it with myself to vote yes to demolish such a home. So I'll be voting against it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Kwiatek.
Thank you. Yes, I live in the neighborhood, so obviously I'm very familiar with the plot. My father-in-law lived at Holy Family Manor for probably the last 10 years of his life, and in one of the old homes that they had assisted living in. And so I was surprised and disappointed to see that the application was for a standalone demolition. There was a design offered, but it certainly fell short of what the HCC would need to consider it. And knowing the history that in 2019 they were given the go-ahead to replace the roof and then they didn't, and based on the fact also that, you know, based on what I can tell, there isn't a particular case made for economic hardship. I mean, although they didn't replace the roof because they said they didn't have the funds for that, COVID, et cetera, I understand. But it concerns me that there has been a lack of care and respect for the property itself. And now with a request for a standalone demolition and the HCC asking them to consider coming back with a proposal that integrates the current building, we wouldn't be able to do that if we approved the demolition because it would be gone. And so I will be voting to uphold the denial tonight to give the property owner another chance to make their case or perhaps get more creative and find a way to incorporate the building. And I will say that I don't appreciate, as a folklorist and someone who studied historic preservation through the lens of traditional vernacular architecture and culture, I don't appreciate the concept that because it wasn't the highest level of, Queen Anne style, or that because only the gardener lived there, that it doesn't have significance to the overall historical story of West Bethlehem. I think that those are too often the properties that are easily torn down when those stories are actually part of the lifeblood of what make up this wonderful city that I've been proud to call home for 25 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other questions or comments? Councilwoman Wilhelm?
Yeah, I wanted to sort of make that same point, that the last point that Councilwoman Kwiatek made. I think the argument sort of changed, and it was a lot of minutes to read, a lot of meeting recordings to watch to sort of follow this journey, and that in the most recent meeting, the primary argument was that this is not a significant contributing structure. I think it was established that it's within the boundaries, and so therefore it is under the purview of the HCC to give an opinion on this. But I agree that perhaps it's not the grandest Queen Anne style, but I don't think we should reserve the word significant for only the grandest. And so that. But with regard to my vote, I will also be voting to uphold the denial, really because I think HCC was very clear in their request to either see a design, yes, with better context, not the sort of flying carpet kind of view that they were given, but also potentially a without demolition or partial demolition and or a study that really proves economic hardship. So that was the request they made. I think by upholding this denial, it gives the applicant the opportunity to give the HCC what they requested so that they can make the fully informed decision that they would like to make.
Thank you. Any other comments from members of council? Seeing none, Mr. Miller, you can call roll. Mr. Callahan.
I will be voting yes for this. I just think this property is really not a historical property. I think it is insignificant in its total scheme. And I think that if we start looking at every new development or new construction project in this city, city with the same scope, we are going to continue to have for many years to come a shortage of housing and affordable housing and new housing. So I will be voting yes for it.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. Any other discussion from members of council?
One more comment, just to clarify, as we had to do sort of up here, because it's a sort of a nuanced vote, we're not voting on the project, we're voting on the demolition only. And so, you know, upholding the denial is not necessarily a disapproval of the project or the vision or even the design that was presented. That's not what we're voting on. So I can say for me, I don't not approve of the project, but we're not voting on that, and neither was the HCC. So I just wanted to clarify that for anybody following along.
Thank you. Any other discussion from members of council? Mr. Callahan?
Yeah, and I just kind of correlate this with the same track that we had on the demolition of the garage. I mean, everybody knows what's going to go on there, so we're moving this ahead is all we're doing, and that's what I'd like to do. So thank you.
Any other discussion? Mr. Miller, we'll call the roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Nay.
Ms. Quiatek?
Nay.
Ms. Laird?
Nay.
Ms. Leon?
Nay.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Nay.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Nay. The resolution fails, 6 opposed, 1 in favor. Moving, 10D was removed from the agenda. As I stated earlier, that applicant withdrew their request for a certificate of appropriateness. So we'll jump to 10E. Mr. Miller.
Certificate of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem resolution is hereby granted for 15 East 4th Street to replace the existing awning cover and also to replace existing window signage with a new logo.
Discussion on 10E. We'll call roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Now, last agenda item 10.
Certificate of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem resolution is hereby granted for 123 East Church Street to replace the existing pine fence with a red cedar fence along the Pine Street side and Wesley Street rear of the property. This resolution, as well as 10E, were sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Discussion? Call roll.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passed 7-0. That concludes tonight's agenda. Get home safe, everybody.
Come on.